even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And thank you very much for listening, for downloading, for subscribing. Thanking you in advance for that one. Wherever you are, Acast, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you get them. I'm Tim here in the Rugby Dungeon with JB.
Hello, Timothy.
And with Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Hello. Right, we've got lots to talk about. Obviously, a big weekend of European Champions Cup action. We've got some news. Can I just start, though, by just a couple of bits of housekeeping that
yes,
I need to do? Firstly, the lovely Andrew Trimble that we gave a little mention to very complimentary of last week. He and his colleagues gave us a shout but pointed out that we didn't mention their podcast. We just mentioned him.
Oh, is that right? Did we not?
Yeah. So I that's probably bad form. So seeing as they recommended us to the Irish fans, House of Rugby in Ireland, Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, with Jerry Flannery, who's also...
It's actually on my subscribe list.
And mine.
Yep. Yeah.
Top lads.
They are very, very good.
So appreciate the shout. And I was flying to Ireland, listening to it, doing my homework on Ulster and Munster, and heard the little mention and thought, damn it. The other thing is, you two got me in trouble last week.
Why?
Because I was talking about the bus trip from...
Yes, now I wanted to...
From Belfast to... I was talking about the bus trip from Belfast to Munster via Dublin, and... You made me pick who I would choose out of the BT team
to sit next to. This got
me in trouble.
Yeah, I wanted to carry on with that because I was going to introduce you as the man that takes takes it one bus trip at a time.
Very diplomatic.
Yeah,
Tim.
Very diplomatic. So who was good on the bus trip?
Everyone.
Well, that's not the point. Everybody.
They were all equally as funny and equally as good good company.
But it was like picking was, in retrospect, it was bad form because I said the calming Nick Mullins.
Okay.
Because, you know, he's just a very calming presence.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that he's never in a rush. He's never in a rush to do anything.
Yeah.
Because
he's so well prepared all the time.
All the time.
His team sheets are a thing of beauty when he jots those out.
However, everybody that I am fortunate to work with and make my job an armchair ride are all wonderful. And I had a wonderful weekend with Craig Doyle, the consummate professional.
Yeah.
So brilliant. So literally no more information than last week.
No.
Exactly the same as last week. Pretty consistent.
Anyway, but you got me in trouble.
Sorry, Tim.
Good.
Yeah. How was your bus journey? You don't need to go into any specifics.
Well, the bus journey actually was
good
terrifying.
Was it?
It was terrifying. The driver, I mean, red lights were optional.
Yep.
Again, he was a maverick in his decision about where and how to drive. It was an experience. Memorable.
Good.
It was good crack.
Did you manage to get... So you drove
from Belfast to Dublin Airport, just a hotel at Dublin Airport, which we got to about 1:30 in the morning. Ooh. 1 o'clock in the morning. Got a bit of shut-eye, and at 10:30 the next morning, we were on our way to Limerick.
Yeah, to Thurman Park.
Very nice.
To Thurman Park.
Well, I was in attendance at one game this weekend.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that later. But I was at the Sale La Rochelle game.
Yeah.
All sorts of goings on there.
There were some interesting decisions by a few French players or players who play for French teams.
Such a French weekend. lots to talk about.
Tom Curry's come back from England with a lot of sass.
I can't wait to hear about that later.
So sassy.
Last weekend, it was kind of a Pro 14 showed up incredibly well. This weekend... Premiership, probably on balance, out best out of the weekend, don't they?
How did Gloucester end up today?
3 points behind, 30-27. With a relatively inexperienced team.
It was, you were right. You said they would change things up. They changed 12 players. They totally mixed it up. I thought they would go
That young lad Lloyd at fly half looks a player.
He looked decent, yeah.
Lloyd at fly half for Gloucester?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his first name?
Not Johan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's been around for a few years. He's been there kind of
young guy. They had him and that Louis Rhys Zammit, the Welsh winger as well. They've got some good young players. The future's bright there. So anyway, but Ackerman has now said, yes, we are now totally focused on the Premiership. Now we lost that one. But Premiership generally showed up well. There were four out of the six teams won because Harlequins beat Bath.
Yeah. 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 Sale won, Exeter won, Saracens won.
In the Pro 14, I think Leinster were the only team to...
Saracens.
Leinster and Ulster. Leinster and Ulster were the only teams to get a win.
So, just before we go into Saracens then, whose campaign is over? Bath are done?
Gloucester are done.
La Rochelle.
Yep.
La Rochelle are done.
Yeah. Leon are done.
Oh, by the way,
they got their first point in the Champions Cup. Leon,
oh, did they?
Yeah, they got a losing bonus point.
Congratulations!
In a 6-13, it looked like they battled very hard against Leinster, but
Benetton are now done.
Yeah.
Oh God, I feel sorry for Benetton. Yeah.
We'll get on to
your
that
beloved Benetton.
But so those five, there's more as well. I can't.
Benetton going through.
There's Glasgow are done. Because they won last week.
Glasgow got the win last week. Ospreys are done.
Oh my god,
Ospreys are a disgrace.
They are a disgrace.
Seriously done. That's it. So it's like, teams are out of win. Gloucester, Ospreys, Bath, La Rochelle, Lyon and Benetton.
So Lyon and La Rochelle, it's like 10 points whoever plays them next, basically, because they don't care anymore.
Yeah. Definitely.
So Saracens, shall we stop there?
Yeah, well, so there's a bit of news. So let's very briefly run through what we either didn't mention last week or has happened this week. So Sean Edwards is France's new defence coach.
Yeah, did you see the press conference for this?
I've not seen it. I've seen the still from the press conference, the picture.
Oh my God. So I can't remember where I watched it, whether it was live on Periscope or whatnot. I can't remember. It was like a working man's club in some colliery town in north of England. It looked like Phoenix Knights. I can't describe.
Was it like a Super League press conference?
It had, like, from what I remember, like faux wood suspended panel ceiling.
Oh, yes.
With like a little wire. A little loose wire sort of just hanging down. I don't know what it would be for. But it looked ridiculous.
He's a really interesting character. And wow. Because he's a bit of a maverick kind of guy. I heard one story about him. I won't say who told me, but basically he was on Welsh duty and went out while they were in the hotel. He went out to watch, I think it was the new Rocky film or something like that.
Sean Edwards was talking about, obviously.
Yeah, Sean Edwards, the Rocky 6 film or whatever, whichever one came out. And he came back and a couple of some Welsh players were walking behind him, but he didn't know he was there. And he walked all the way through the lobby, apparently, to the lift. Like shadow boxing. So he's just a real maverick character. And him in the most unpredictable environment in world rugby.
I think he could be a brilliant appointment for France. Because he is the kind of guy who will put structure into their team.
What I don't like is the idea. And you see it on Twitter and it makes me cringe. You're going, oh, these French players will get the shock of a lifetime. They're professional rugby players who play with other professional players from all over the globe. I don't think a coach is going to shock them that much, personally.
No, I don't think he'll shock them. I think the processes that he will put in place
and the intensity of the way he delivers it.
The French cry when they play rugby. I don't know how much more intense. Maybe he's going to dial it down rather than anything. I mean, like, I hate the narrative. Like, oh, they will have the shock of a lifetime. No, they won't.
It could be a clash of cultures, but like you say, for that reason, it could be a brilliant thing.
Yeah, it could.
And who was the British guy that overhauled France's defence?
Dave Ellis.
Dave Ellis.
Now coaching at for three bonus points. Come on,
Coventry.
Nearly, very close. Tim.
Close. Broad Street.
Ooh, closer.
Mosley.
Kenilworth.
Yeah,
Kenilworth.
Kenilworth with a mean defence now.
That is interesting. So, there's that bit of news. Jamie Joseph signed on for 4 more years with Japan. Meaning that the New Zealand job is narrowing down to...
The worst job in rugby, quite frankly.
The easiest job in rugby.
No, I don't think so.
Hansen did nothing for for 8 years and won a World Cup.
He's rode that gravy train until its conclusion, and whoever takes over now, it's bloody difficult.
I'd like to request that Graham Henry or maybe Steve Hansen are part of the next World Cup punditry team, because I think they'd be great.
Have they ever? I mean, Do they say much? I don't really know.
Yeah, well, they don't mind saying what they think.
Yeah,
that's what I love about
them. Graham Henry's almost like a racist granddad. Like, he just says whatever he thinks.
What did he say? There was something.
Oh, they'll be shitting themselves.
Yeah, quite frankly. He'll be absolutely shitting himself, quite frankly.
Very
loved
good.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't want the All Blacks job now.
So maybe not now. Historically, it has been one of the easiest jobs.
Yeah, I'd happily have them when they were the best team on the planet by a country mile.
And when South Africa were in total disarray.
Yeah.
And Lancaster was coaching England.
Amazing.
Yeah. Mm. That's good time.
So other news. Saracens did not request a review, as we talked about last week. Nigel Ray saying they did the wrong thing for the right reason.
That quote is the most incredible quote.
Yeah.
It's not really... There's not much contrition there, is there?
No. Part of me was thinking, just say sorry. Just apologise. Just put your hands up and say, look, we got it wrong.
Technically wrong.
You've already accepted liability by paying the money and taking the fine. Just say sorry
just
as well.
Say sorry. But part of me loves it. Part of me thinks it's absolutely brilliant.
I've never loved Saracens more, frankly. I mean, I think I'm turning into an actual bona fide Saracens fan.
Yeah, that's how much of a contrarian you are. What, everybody's getting a Saracens. I love them.
Yeah, everyone's booing them.
Yeah, there's something about them now. Like, they've got a new togetherness. Like before, yeah, look, they just threw a load of cash at some players and they had a great team. And they spoke about wolf packs and togetherness. That's wonderful.
Wolves and dressing
rooms. But now they have to actually do it. And I like them even more for it. They've actually got... So, this weekend, what are they? Like 22 points down in the Premiership.
Yeah.
They're playing with a teenage fly half, but the stands are still packed. They're still taking it seriously. They go out there and they waste the Ospreys. It couldn't be any better, really.
They got
Glasgow.
No, Ospreys.
Ospreys. It was Exeter play Glasgow.
Saracens Ospreys.
Yeah, of course.
44-3.
Yeah, I mean, if there is a better contrast of teams and cultures and disasters, it's Saracens versus Ospreys. I mean, Ospreys are monumental. They should fold that club now.
No, they almost did last year.
They almost did.
Yeah, and they were right.
There was a WhatsApp group. I mean, were those screenshots real? The ones that were sent around?
They should be. I mean, at this point, just give up on the Ospreys. How is that the best team in Wales? I mean, they have to be, don't they, to actually be in the competition? They were the best team in Wales last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just awful. Everything about them is awful from top to bottom. But they do sell the second most kits in the Pro 14, so there is that.
On the Saracens news,
yeah,
I've not really seen this anywhere, but there's a question I raised on our little chat.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now, Phil.
Which was, did the Saracens news, the impending Saracens news that came out only 2 days after the World Cup final, do you think that possibly had any impact, any bearing on the World Cup final? Can you correlate the difference in performance?
Surely not.
Well, okay, so let's just pull back the curtain a bit here. Hands up. We heard the rumours, didn't we?
Yeah.
And they were weeks before.
Weeks before.
Weeks before. Yeah. If anyone had any sense that knew the rumours weeks before, they would have put some money on Saracens getting relegated.
Yes, they would.
If anyone had any sense.
If anyone had any sense.
At all.
At all. A tiny bit of sense.
Unfortunately, at this podcast.
We don't have any sense.
But we know someone that did.
We know someone who put a few quid on.
Anyway, the point is this. What was the point? I can't remember.
the rumours were weeks before.
Yeah. So if we know the rumours in a basement in Manchester, I'd be gobsmacked if the Saracens players didn't.
And they didn't seem affected the Saturday before.
They certainly didn't the Saturday before. There's a load of things that you can possibly look at to explain away the England performance in the World Cup final. Half on the England side and half due to the amazing performance from the South Africans. Yeah. That could be one. It does feel a little conspiratorial and convenient.
I agree. Yeah,
but there is no doubt that the RFU, or whoever it wasn't the RFU, Premier Rugby, was holding back that report.
Oh, definitely.
I mean,
of course, we know that. That makes total sense. Because had England lost in exactly the same way, by exactly the same margin, and the report had come out previously, everybody would have been chucking him daggers going, what you did.
Yeah.
It was absolutely the right thing.
Totally the right thing to do.
So because they did that, it does make me think they obviously expected it to have an impact on the players. So the players knew, Premier Rugby thought it would have an impact. So I'm going to say it probably did have an impact.
I think it was just smart PR management. Like, because if they'd put that out during or before the World Cup, if they put that out before or during the World Cup, they would have got no end of stick.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah. Which
for sabotaging
again. Yeah, yeah.
England's chances.
Absolutely.
Now I've got a question. What's the point in punishment for Saracens?
What's the point
yeah,
in punishment?
Yeah, what is the point in it?
The 36 point and the five
compensating million. Their rivals and a, well, it's quite a, seems like an odd question. I don't really understand because that's what the rules say.
Yeah. The reason I ask this question, right, is because with the Saracen situation now, they've accepted their punishment.
Yeah.
But now they've been punished, do we just move on from it? I mean, do you take the view that they've taken the points, slate is wiped clean, and we all just go forward?
Well, that's like saying back it, but 10 years ago with Bloodgate, Dean Ryan stepped down, people that were directly involved were moved on, they paid a fine.
Then they're free to come back.
Do we wipe the slate clean? Well, yes. Well,
yeah, I think so.
But
Dean Richard had a, was it 2 or 3 year ban?
2 or 3 year ban. Yeah, 2 year ban. So yes, they took the punishment. That doesn't stop people having animosity, but in real terms, yes, you move on. But people can still, you know, like people will be buying those fake wads of £50 notes and waving them. Like when Saracens go to Thomond Park, that's going to be fun.
That is going to be tasty. That bloke with his boat shoes and shorts.
Yeah.
He's got something to really get irate about now.
I forgot about him. What a stunning and brave, if I remember correctly.
Oh, absolutely.
But the rumour that's come out about Saracens as well this week is, I think this is very shrewd of Eddie Jones to market his book by saying this, and that's all I think it is. I think there's no truth or likelihood whatsoever Saracens withdrawing players from the Six Nations. I think just won't happen. Mark McCall said, no, we encourage players to play for England.
Saracens are doing everything right now. You know, they're saying the players will play. Yep. We're not going to downgrade Europe. We're going to try and win that. We're going to try and do our best in the Premiership. What more do you want from them? You know, they paid the fine.
I don't buy it on the Europe front.
I don't buy it either.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, you don't buy that they're going for it?
They're going to go for it. I don't buy that.
Nah, they're going for it. They're going for it. They've just beaten Ospreys by 40 points to 3.
But they're in such a tough... So it's great to play a few of the World Cup stars who needed game time a little bit. So, like, Cruis and, like, Mako, but not play Billy and Itoje and Jamie George and Owen Farrell. So I think they've done what they need to for this game, playing Racing and playing Munster. Because don't forget, they're in the toughest pool.
Well, I mean,
if
they beat Munster, right, in 2 weeks' time, they'll have no other option but to go for it. I mean, imagine as well, you're one of those players, one of that coaching group. They are not the type to sort of strategically say, "Oh, we'll throw."
Of course they're not going to.
It's in
whatever
their blood
team they
to
put, whatever team they put out, they will try and win.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the team that they put out.
They will put a sensible team out.
Yeah,
they're going for it. They're going for it. Believe you me,
I would put money on them not getting out of that group.
Well, if they lost it this weekend, so you know, Racing are Racing, they're away at Racing. You know, not many teams win there.
Yeah,
you can kind of say fine.
No team has won at Thomond Park since Leicester in 2015 in Europe.
Now, is that because they play home games elsewhere as well?
No. Nope. They haven't lost at home in Europe in 4 years.
Crikey. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to happen.
Hear me now, believe
me.
And a few, but just very briefly on the Eddie Jones thing, he's got a bit of stick. There's quite a few people, you know, putting the boot into him, going, he's thrown some England players under the bus. He talked about unity and stuff, but look what he's done to sell a few books.
I don't know any of these stories.
The selection stories, going, I should have started Marlon, not Mako. I should have started Henry Slade.
Don't know about that one.
No.
So people are suggesting it was on the rugby paper today. He's thrown, it might have just been a headline, I didn't read the article, but he's thrown Mako and George Ford under the bus.
Oh, no.
I don't buy that either.
I don't buy that at all.
No.
Yeah.
I have not read the book, so. I'm still finishing off House of Lancaster.
And I'm still finishing off Smelling of Roses, Stuart Barnes' autobiography.
Wow. What a mind.
We've got to get on to some rugby in a minute, but Joe Thockin, a singer, is the one thing. So yeah. Bath put out a very interestingly worded statement on Friday when they announced the team. Evidently, Joe Thockin, a singer, is seriously injured to the point where he may not be back till maybe February, March.
Missing Six Nations, I think.
He could miss the start of the Six Nations, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a significant injury. And evidently, Bath had no idea that this had happened as it was happening. He played one game in the World Cup against USA, scored two tries. Apparently, he took limited part in training outside of that because he had an injury.
A significant knee injury.
I mean, I'm with Bath. I don't understand why they didn't know and why he wasn't sent home.
Yeah, if they didn't know.
And from an England point of view, why do you want to carry an injured player? None of it makes sense.
Yeah, and you can replace him. Yeah. You could have replaced him with another tight end.
Exactly.
Or another scrum half.
And now Bath would have had another 3 or 4 weeks, let's say, to organise cover for him. Which they may now have to find with the fact that they've also got Anthony Watson potentially out as well.
What's wrong with him?
He got injured at the weekend.
He went
off holding his knee. So we don't know how serious that is yet, so we'll watch this space. But he was looking electric. So
yeah,
he's not a man that's had much luck with injuries either.
No.
No, definitely not.
So here's hoping he's okay. But there you go, one to watch. And also, speaking of Racing, they had a meeting with the Fijian freak, Leone Nakarawa. One of the most talented players in the world. Because he was two weeks late coming back after the World Cup. His dad got in touch with Racing and said he's helping build my house in Fiji.
Building a family home.
He's reported back. He's in a 20-minute meeting, he gave his reasons, and he's now got to wait between 48 hours and a month for Racing's decision on whether to sanction him at all, which could be from just a slap on the wrists. It could be a fine. It could be sacking.
So, Alan, what's the hold-up here? I mean, why 48 hours?
Well, it's just the system that they have. I mean, it was basically one way that they could tell me on Saturday. Well, because I didn't do it on the telly. I asked someone beforehand. I went, look, if I asked about Leone Nakarawa, what's the chat? And they went, 48 to a month. That's all we're saying. That's all we're saying at the minute. So there was very little point me taking up any time. Yeah. Getting that answer.
They
were like, no, we're not talking about it.
Yeah, move things on, didn't they?
So we'll see. But he could get sacked and go to another club.
As well, Sale Sharks are saying. They are saying.
Steve Downing. To who? Openly what? Saying, apparently.
Openly?
Yeah, in the press today. Yeah. He said, we are talking to him every day. We want him here. And it might, you know, that to me sounds like it's happening imminently.
Now, if it was going to happen imminently, you'd think he would not say it publicly.
Oh, who else is he after?
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Well, he also said...
Four-dimensional chess here.
Yeah, exactly.
Downs. Yes. Now, yes.
Never take it at face value.
Because George Gross is coming. Must be. I can't think of anything else.
Hey.
Because Nakarawa... Knows? So, Tim, one of the potential sanctions that you mentioned was him being released from his...
Yeah.
Or his contract being terminated from Racing Metro.
Yeah.
Racing 92. I find that so unlikely when he is so phenomenally talented and well paid, and they broke his contract to get him there, his Glasgow contract to get him there, that I just can't see that. And then if that doesn't happen, then Sale would have to pay a transfer fee, which is awesome.
Yeah, you actually, it's mandatory, isn't it?
Unless he retires like Johan Huson tried to do.
To run a fertiliser business from Fiji.
Yes, exactly. To build houses in Fiji.
Stacks up.
Maybe he was trying to...
There we go.
...get his retirement plan
Fijian in. Fijian property magnate, Leone Nakarawa.
So I just can't see that happening. So maybe Dimes is trying to set up another move.
He sounded pretty genuine, but now you mention it, Tim.
He sounded genuine before.
Well, no.
No, when Dimes says that stuff...
I'll take him at face value.
Except for the... massive, massive caveat that you're not taking him at face value.
I'm happy to take him at face value. I would be, all I've said is that would be a surprising way to try and engineer the move to make it so public. It would just to me, that seems odd, but maybe that's a message.
He's just a guy that tells
maybe,
us.
Maybe he wants Leone Nakarawa to know how much he really wants him. He just wants everyone to be talking about that. Who knows? Mm. We'll see. We will see.
He also made a little quip about, I was looking for one of the Saracens locks, but surprisingly, they're not available. He's got a good old laugh.
Yeah, very good. And again, it could just be a rumour. Who knows? Carl Sinclair linked with a move to Gloucester in the summer. Of course, no conversations happen before Christmas because you're not allowed to. And I predict that one of two things will happen. Carl Sinclair will either sign a new contract with Harlequins or he will sign a new contract with another club.
I think
both of those possibilities are possible.
Yeah, or he doesn't sign any contracts. We've got all our bases covered.
He retires and builds houses in Fiji.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting for Gloucester. I don't think Fraser Balmain's quite worked out in the way they thought he would.
It's just he's not had no luck with injury. No, has he? That's his issue.
And he had a tough first half today. I think a real tough first half.
I think a lot of Leicester fans that have watched him play would say that they preferred him over Brooks, which is quite a big deal, because I think Brooks is a very good scrimmager. And it just hasn't worked out in the same way. I tell you, the other one that hasn't worked out well for them is Owen Williams. I mean, you keep forgetting that he even exists. But he's on Megaman.
Valrapava Ruskin's been injured loads as well. He was sort of ready to kick on and become an England squad loose head.
Yeah. So you think about Gloucester. Like, they've got like those two players there. If they would have reached their potential, as Gloucester would have seen them, they'd had an international loose head and probably the Welsh, the Welsh inside centre. But injuries, bad luck.
Mm. Yeah, that's tough.
Tough old game.
It is a tough old game.
But maybe it'll be Gloucester's year. Maybe all those people's year next year.
Next year, I think. Yeah,
in Europe next year. Who knows? Premiership. Maybe.
Premiership, not this year, mate.
They've got a good chance. I like
one Gloucester. Or two more players and they're in.
I like Gloucester this year.
Do you know what? This year is the year of the paper tiger. It's only Exeter, I think, who are genuinely good team. Because Saracens are still a genuinely good team, but they've been removed from the conversation.
Yeah, they can't make top four.
No.
So the next best team, Gloucester, Northampton, Sale, probably.
Yeah, Exeter, then.
Then those three?
Yeah, on their day.
Yeah.
Exeter in the Premiership haven't shown it this year. Bristol is a good shout, actually.
Well, Rory Best to Bristol for 6 months?
Yeah.
Maybe this is like a George Smith-type move. We've got some young hookers. Come and give them the benefit of all your wisdom.
Yeah, come and show us a throw-in.
I actually don't think it's a terrible idea.
No.
Well, if he wants to come, fine. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I think it would be quite a smart move to do exactly that, to have some of the younger lads learn from him.
I mean, I don't know, because I've never met Rory Best. I've never spoke to the guy. But I imagine playing outside of Ireland would be something which you want to do eventually. Now your Ireland commitments are over, why not?
Yeah, and he's got a young family up in Northern Ireland.
Of course, the reason they don't, not many Irish players play outside of Ireland, and unless, because if you play those 10 seasons in Ireland, you get 40%.
Give me my culture
money. You
get
40% of all the tax you paid back on your 10 on your.
But
10 highest
does that
paid seasons, something, or the average of your, no, it's the average of your, it's something like the average of your 5 highest paid years.
Not to ruin your point here, does that work in Ulster?
Yeah.
Be in the UK?
Yeah, it's an IRFU. That's a good point.
Yeah, but IRFU doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah, that's a good
point. I could work for the IRFU over here.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. I'll find out the information on that and get back to you, but watch this space on Rory Best, who knows?
Yeah, I think it'd be a good move.
There is a goal-kicking backup.
Yeah, Slotter.
Yeah,
nailed that.
Left foot, didn't he? But let's talk about Rory Best's beloved team. Your beloved Ulsterman.
Oh.
Stand up for the Ulsterman.
What a turnout, eh?
I thought there was no chance that Ulster were going to win this, and then I saw the conditions, and it was a pretty miserable night.
It was,
and I thought maybe something could happen here, because the Claremont pack is monstrous.
I can't believe how big Petheli Yato is.
Oh,
that
my God.
He looks big on the telly, but you stand next to him, his legs are the size of my torso.
And he is so athletic as well.
Yeah.
But he didn't do a single thing in the whole game.
He didn't.
So when I saw the conditions, I thought, maybe we've got a chance, because that Claremont pack is enormous. However, that Claremont pack are used to playing in slightly warmer, slightly nicer conditions. They've travelled away to what can be a fairly hostile and intimidating atmosphere, and in awful conditions.
And
maybe we've got a chance.
And they changed their halfbacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
The
McIntyre.
Greg Laidlaw and Jake McIntyre.
Yeah.
Not a great showing for those two, was it?
I mean, not to say Ulster wouldn't have won anyway, but I think that decision cost them the game.
I'm not sure, actually. I mean, I thought where Ulster won, it was up front. I thought they manhandled Claremont.
They really fronted up.
Yeah.
They massively fronted up. Mm. And Kurtzier was just... the whole pack, like the scrum was much better than I was anticipating. The scrum was handled. The line-out generally did well.
Kurtzier. He's put himself in the frame to get back in that South Africa squad.
Yeah.
He's playing like a man who deserves
to be there.
Someone
told me, it might have been comms, that he started off at started off as a seven. That can't be right, can it?
He did play well.
South African seven.
That was mentioned in comms.
Well, that's blindside.
And I immediately thought
blindside.
He might have been wearing seven, but that does mean he's blindside.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, he was. In my head, he wasn't always as enormous physically as he is now. But he came onto the scene when he was a bit younger.
Yeah.
He is enormous.
He's had that. He's had repeated knee injuries for a couple of years and has clearly just spent all of the time
in the gym,
doing bench, shoulders, curls, chin-ups. Just the glamour upper body muscles.
He looks fantastic.
He does look incredible.
I tell you the other guy who I liked.
He's not. There's no glamour muscle about it. It's all for show. It's all for...
functional.
All for good.
I thought it was all for rubbing it in the opposition's face.
Maybe a bit of both.
After he gets over the line, he can flex a bit.
Yeah.
The one that stood out for me was your boy in the centre, who I've... McCloskey. Thought he's ace.
McCloskey did well.
I thought...
And Luke Marshall.
Jordy Murphy and Marcel Coetzee in the back row were both brilliant. In fact, Reedy was just chopping everything in sight as well.
Yeah. And
that back row, brilliant.
The back three. So Stockers was the quietest of the lot. I thought Luddick defensively did really well. Addison did some good stuff going forward.
Great player.
Addison worried me there was a couple of times where he was far too casual chasing back. The Raka disallowed try. He started chasing back as if he thought someone was covering behind him, and then realised no one was covering behind him, and Raka was accelerating past him, and it was only Raka's knock on that prevented an embarrassing try for him.
And it was one of those weird games where, even though, if you didn't know the score, you'd assume that Ulster were up by a lot of points. And actually, they weren't.
Yeah, and that's where I was so nervous, because Ulster were by far the better team for most of that game. But Clermont were always within a score. And they've got so many dangerous players. If Raka or Yato, one of those boys, gets half a chance, it's game over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt the Ulster score did not represent their performance.
No,
there.
And that bonus point for Clermont could come back and bite Ulster on the backside later in the tournament, because theoretically, if Ulster do Quinns home and away, then all Clermont have got to do, assuming that they get the wins against Bath home and away, all Clermont have got to do is outdo what Ulster did to them at home,
which most likely they will.
And
Ulster, this will be something they might regret, that they have had two wins and two very important wins, but no bonus points at the moment.
Yeah.
And have conceded bonus points. Admittedly, against Bath it's irrelevant, but against Clermont it could mean something.
But there's something about that nine shirt, and I think the Ulster scrum half has become as close to a petit général as you get with Ruan Pienaar and now John Cooney.
Cooney was superb.
He was outstanding.
He really... because when he came across, I was kind of thinking... I mean, he was certainly behind Kieran Marmion in...
Going to Saracens, by the way, sticking at Connacht. Funny that.
What is that then? Could not get him...
I'm not sure.
They can cultivate his business.
Marmion Prop Limited is going through the shredder.
Yeah, I thought when he came across, I was a bit concerned about the IRFU's decision to let Ruan Pienaar go. And I needn't have been, because Cooney has just been sensational. Well, the importance of his goal kicking and the two tries he's taken in the last 2 weeks have been sensational.
You've got to give the lads the opportunity. Sometimes there's someone so dominant like Ruan Pienaar is, you'd never give someone else an opportunity.
But Cooney wasn't getting the opportunity behind Kieran Marmion at Connacht.
Yeah.
So... yeah.
Was he playing 10 there, though? Or was he always playing?
I think he did play a tiny bit.
I know I've said this many, many times before, but he was the 10 to AJ McKinsey's 9. That's what they were doing in Dublin schools or whatever the hell they're up to.
It's interesting. But I'll tell you what, one theme of the weekend was incredible bits of footballing skill, because Cooney's chip and then the double dribble before he then scored his try. You had Finn Russell. Oh my god.
Different level, that, isn't it?
It should.
How did he should
have to be on After the Watershed.
Yeah.
For every game. He is just, it's filled. But there was Teddy Thomas as well. Yeah. So there's a bunch of these incredible bits of footballing skill. It's just weird how they all happened all in the same weekend.
Yeah. There were some awesome shareable highlights. That Finn Russell.
It's like magic, isn't it? It's like
the more you watch that, the better it gets.
Yeah.
Because the eyes go one way, the body shapes one way.
Look to the left, goes as if he's going to pass, then you think, oh, he's going to drop it on the inside of his right foot.
Yeah,
and go the way that he's standing,
but he drops it onto his left foot. Oh,
and
so good.
The best bit about it, which I only picked up after watching it maybe four or five times, he nutmegs Scannell with it as he's going through. It is absolutely brilliant, that bit of
I like to think he shouted nuts or Megs when he actually went through.
All the other boys lifting weights, and he's, I don't know.
But
that was only one bit of a bunch of amazing bits of skill, like the try he set up for one him off.
Yeah,
he's
was
amazing.
Super.
I mean, I think he identified that Jeremy Lockman was a lion. It was like a lioness out in the wild, spotting the lame member of the wildebeest herd. It's like he went, ah, you're injured, I'm going to have you.
He was on one leg, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Of all the skill this weekend, the bigger out the back hat pass. Have you seen that?
That was outrageous.
That was unbelievable. In full speed, you have no idea what's happened. And when they slow it down,
Dan Bigger is unbelievable.
So Dan Bigger did that outrageous bit of skill. I think it was for the Collins track.
Tell you what, Dan Bigger never gets dropped to 12 for his international country. Just saying.
It just dropped altogether for Anscombe for the last couple of years.
Finisher, mate.
Well, finishing his kick at the end of the game to win it.
Yeah.
Bigger, fair play. Fair play to that lad.
I'm just having a look, see if I can get the Bigger highlight up, because anything done Bigger, obviously I want to watch it. No, sadly not.
But let me tell you about Toman Park then. So Kingspan was brilliant, and Dan McFarland is doing a fantastic job there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those situations where, in fact, because I've worked on Ulster games the last fortnight, and it's absolutely evident that the players love him. Like both Will Addison in the post-match chat after the Bath game and John Cooney in the chat after the game on Friday night.
Yeah.
They both brought up Dan McFarland. Dan's got a mantra of fight for every inch and, you know,
we really
fight for each other. They brought it up. So if they're just bringing it up at every opportunity when they're chatting, it's clearly more than sunk in. They're bringing it to life, and like you said, they have grafted. Didn't play great at the Rec and snuck a win.
Got the result.
Played really well against Claremont. Had to actually dig in the end. Should have won by more.
Yeah, they really should have won by more. But against an amazing team like Claremont, you've got to get every win. You've got to be thankful for every point you get.
He's doing great things. And as much as from my perspective of chatting to him, so I chatted to Dan McFarland over the last couple of years, or last year when he took over and this year, and you can tell he's really comfortable in his skin. He's relaxed now. He's a year into the job. And so there's just good vibes.
Yeah.
There's good vibes.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Mm. Ooh, I've just watched the Dan Bigger offload. It's very nice.
Yeah, it's outrageous. It really is.
Yeah.
Toman Park. Oh, my goodness.
Atmosphere?
unbelievable. So what I loved was, before the game, the atmosphere is right up there.
Yeah.
In the UK and Ireland, that's the best atmosphere.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, AJ Bell.
AJ Bell aside, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's up there. It sounds like it.
I think it is the best atmosphere.
Did they do their little song?
Stand up and fight. Yes.
Love that.
But they had a choir doing it and with a woman lead singer doing it. But the choir was made up of these real elderly people. Brilliant. So we had all these little nanas. Keep punching till you make the punches tell. It was brilliant. It was absolutely awesome.
Class.
I loved it. And the fans, because I was sat literally behind the advertising boardings just to the left of the Racing bench. And so the crowd stood right behind me, waving their flags above my head. And the fans are amazing. So there's such a relationship between the Munster fans and the players, to the point where they all go, "Go on, Peter!
Yeah.
Smash him! Take his head off, Jonathan! Smash him!" And then anything that the opponents do, even if it's an obviously backward pass, "Forward! Send him off!" It's the most partisan crowd. Yeah. I love it.
Like the Galatasaray of rugby.
Yeah, I love it.
You used to get that a lot at rugby league. Like when I would go,
I went. Do you remember the Warrington game we went to?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's rugby league is electric for that.
It's unbelievable the how partisan the crowds are. They are so one-eyed. They cannot see anything other than...
Yeah.
It is a total injustice against their team. Everything.
Everything's injustice. To the point, the referees hate them.
We knew Wire, Warrington Wolves fan, who would tell you, like black is black, that there was a known conspiracy of all the,
everyone
Super,
knows
League,
it.
All the Super League referees, yeah, against Warrington Wolves.
And it was like, and the evidence was, everyone knows it.
Everyone knows it. Of course everyone knows it.
Everyone knows it. Do you know it? Everyone knows it.
Contrast that with the total silence for kicks, to the point where there was even, it was so quiet. And to the point where there was obviously like a toddler kid who just, he went, ah! And there was a half a dozen people went, shh,
boom. A slapping noise.
It was brilliant. It was really good.
So back on the Ribbly, I'm pretty sure. In fact, I'm pretty sure I went to the best ever Salford City Reds game. About 10 years ago. I'm certain that must be one of the top five Salford City Reds games of all time. I'm sure...
I have that next on the on the running order, actually.
Think about this. I went to the Willows, right? And now, have you ever been to Willows, Tim?
That's the one that's sunk into the ground, is it? Or is that Salford's old place?
No, it is.
Willows is Salford's old place.
I'm not sure it's sunk into the ground, is it?
No, not from what I remember.
I mean, it's in a sink estate. Is that the same thing?
Yeah. It's in the centre of a bit of
I went to a rugby league ground that I think was that, and it's like
Ordsall, Bradford.
Ordsall sunk into the ground, yeah.
Oh, maybe it's that one.
Yeah, and it's shaped like a wok. I think the actual playing surfaces.
Yeah.
It's an absolute disgrace. But yeah, anyway, so I went to Salford City Reds. And you know the stadium, Phil. They had 12,000 in attendance. Yeah. Warrington, Salford. Salford were doing pretty well. The days of Sean Ruggetson and whatnot.
Malcolm Alka.
Malcolm Alka, of course. Malcolm Alka, who's now doing jail time, I think. And I'm sure the lead, it was like 33-32, and the lead changed hands something like 11 times. It was unbelievable.
Well, this game at Turnham Park was pretty tidy as well.
Not as good as...
How did... Yeah, not as good as that, obviously. Yeah, okay. But how did Racing not win this? How did they not comfortably win this?
Yeah, Racing at times were unbelievable. That first half, I was sure... I was watching this down in London in the hotel before going out. I was sure they were going to pull away in that first half. Mm. But Munster, they kept the penalties. Yeah. They stayed in it. Eat their way down the pitch with the penalty. Yeah. And you knew. And then when Keith Earls goes over at 40 minutes to pull him back within 2 points or whatever it was at that point, you're like, no, Munster are going to do this now. Munster, they've got the crowd behind them. They've got the fitness. They can come back towards the end. And they did it in that second half. So they scored late on in the first half.
Yeah.
The Conway try late on in the second half. And then they worked themselves into position 21-all for the Hanrahan.
You would
shot at goal. Oh, I mean, after he's taken that,
because his conversion was unreal the touchline to make it 21-all. Yeah. And this is kind of like, well, the conversion, if he gets a drop goal, the conversion's irrelevant anyway, because they would have won by a point. But like, you couldn't have asked for the drop goal for Munster to have worked it into a better position.
Yeah.
And here's a fact for you: JJ Hanrahan has never kicked a drop goal in his professional career.
Oh,
I've no idea if that was his first attempt.
God,
but. I mean, it feels hard criticising him for it, but...
You can't ask for a better position. To get your team into that position, you can't criticise him. He will be disappointed with himself that they worked so hard to get back into that position after scoring the try, and for him to kind of snatch it and pull it.
Particularly as they're in such a tough pool. I think what's good for Munster is, I think I'm right in saying they have Saracens at home first before they go away. Had it been the other way round, I think that could have ended up really costing them, because potentially Munster beat Saracens in Thoma Park, and then Saracens just go, right, well, we're not going through, so we'll change our team. Whereas had it been the other way round, Saracens got a bit of confidence and eyed a quarter-final spot with a home win.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you think Saracens are going to throw it away anyway?
No, I didn't say throw it away.
Yeah, I'm just not taking it very seriously.
They just won't select their strongest team.
Yeah, they will. If there's any injury risks, they will rotate players and they will change it up.
Problem is, by the time we get Saracens playing, that's the second time round, probably the replacement players will be the strongest team that they can put out.
Yeah.
They'll be wanting to rest Ben Earl.
You might be right about Ben Earl and
Jackson Ray should not be a bloody good leader.
Shagun, who got the two tries this weekend.
TC Lamasicelli, who started the final. Well, you know, maybe we should rest him and bring on Mako instead. Yeah.
Lamasicelli's tired, but yeah.
He plays on loose.
He can play both. He's played predominantly for the last couple of seasons, both USA and Saracens at tired.
Yeah, he does both. Just thought I'd mention
that's pretty cool. That's rare and
yeah, and very bloody valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure he started the final at loose.
No.
I'm sure he did.
No, I'm sure. What, which final?
Not Cock.
Ooh, maybe.
I'm certain Lamasicelli. Which final?
Premiership final, I thought.
I'm certain.
Check them both. So I've got double the chance of maybe being right.
And double the chance of being
wrong. You may
wrong.
Well be right, anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, he definitely does both sides, and that's important to know.
Leinster scraped. I didn't watch the game against Leon. It was the ugliest looking scoreline from the weekend.
6-13.
I imagine it was an ugly game, but...
Yeah, it was from what I saw, which was the highlights. Hard fought and hard ground out. Leon,
their first ever point in the Champions Cup.
Amazing!
In front of their home fans, put in a spirited performance, but Leinster at the end were too good.
I think they only had three players playing from last week.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
And did you see the Leinster team was
stacked?
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, it's fair to say I think Leon are going to have to wait till next year for their first win now.
He didn't play in the Premiership final.
Did he not?
Cock did. Did he get injured in the
so Figlow
in the
and
semi?
So it's always I always think of Figlow and Cock being the tight heads.
Yeah,
and then
Barrett is Barrington.
Barrington
backing up Mako,
and now Carey,
and then Reece Carey as
and
well.
They had Christian Judge as a tight head last year.
Christian Judge was tight as well.
But let's have a look at the. European.
And they've got Josh Iwuanoke, which they got from Harlequins.
Yeah.
Any good?
Yeah, he looks good. Talented young man.
Big strong boy.
Yeah.
Well, whilst you look at that, shall we talk about a different game?
Yeah, so let's round off.
Titi Lamasicelli started at tight end in the Champions Cup final, came off injured after 29 minutes.
Yeah.
Take it back then.
So let's just wrap up the Irish teams then. Connacht. Another spirited performance after a brilliant win last week.
Yeah, and they'll take some positives from this.
Yep.
And other teams will take some positives from this because they found some really good gaps through that Toulouse midfield a number of times. Ultane Dillan and the Australian Fayanga brother, Colby Fayanga there, who's playing back row for them, were finding gaps through Toulouse's midfield, which other teams will exploit better than Connacht.
15-14 at half time.
They were right in it until 65 minutes maybe.
They will take some positives out of it, as they should. I think this Toulouse team is probably going to be, they're going to be semi-finalists, finalists. I think they're good.
Toulouse are a serious outfit.
They are a serious outfit. They're not operating at that level yet.
Not yet.
But it's a long season.
Yeah,
It is nice when Toulouse are good. I feel the world is a better place.
I think the win is coming from France or Ireland, clear 100%.
Really?
Yeah.
It depends if Exeter. So the way that Exeter have been one of the most impressive teams so far, possibly even the most impressive team.
Absolutely smashed Glasgow.
Yeah, they're the only only team to have two bonus point wins.
It's not a Welsh team, is it? So you might be right. It's definitely not going to be a Welsh team.
It's not going to be Welsh. It's not going to be Scottish.
Probably not Scottish.
It's not going to be Italian.
Do you think, of the English teams, do you think Exeter look like they're on course to qualify? Back-to-back games against Sale now.
Yeah. And then they'll travel to Glasgow, which they should be able to win.
Well,
and they host La Rochelle, which they will win. Yeah. So.
I do think Sale have what it takes to beat Exeter at the AJ Bell.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Going away, though.
But I think Exeter are on course to qualify.
Yes.
If they win their home games and sneak one of the two away games.
Oh, just win your home games.
Yeah.
If they win their two home games and pick up one bonus point, they're on 19 points. That is enough to see them through.
Yeah.
They will qualify.
Yeah.
What they want is to win both their home games and one of the away games, finish on 22, 23, 24 points, guarantee a high-seeded home quarterfinal. That is what they should be aiming for.
Yeah, 100%.
But if they are going to be going full bore for the league, and why wouldn't you? then
yes, they're well, losers
because, on both fronts.
Because, well, the beauty of the Saracens thing for Exeter is maybe they can. You think they can afford to lose a couple more games than they ordinarily might in the league, in the Premiership.
Still guarantee a home semi-final.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fair point.
I mean, not to go back to Saracens again, but like Saracens and Exeter have one thing in common, which is I don't think they have a proper first team until the final. They have a process-driven organisation, both of them.
Yep.
So like you see an Exeter team now, and then you might see one which is radically different next week, but they're fundamentally the same organisation. Whereas, say, Sale Sharks, to give you an example, have a clear best 15. And if those guys are injured, the next lot aren't so
well. Part of that is just the depth and talent in the squad. Like, because like there's guys like Matt Kovacic haven't been involved in these two games. Not even in the matchday squad.
Yeah,
because he just goes and plucks Jacques Vermeulen out of nowhere. Yeah. No one's heard of him.
Like Don Armand,
and he looks the real deal straight away.
Yeah,
yeah, or Dave Ewers.
They
haven't even got. Crazy. They've got Alex Cuthbert watching in the ground wearing a flat cap and a lovely moustache looking like Mark Lawrenson.
Hell of a look.
Is that who it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, Cuthbert.
So just to put a bit of colour on that story, Tim sent a picture or someone sent a picture.
Someone in our WhatsApp, OP, in our fancy rugby draft you, WhatsApp group.
OP did.
Yeah, who is that? And I genuinely did not know who that was. I didn't know.
It took me a few seconds to be like, bloody hell, that's Cuthbert.
Until he said it now, I had no idea who it was. I gave up guessing.
So yeah, Exeter. A pleasing thing for Exeter about this game will be the way that they moved Glasgow around the pitch and the way that Joe Simmons showed a bit of Steenson about him and played the right part of the pitch and almost forced Glasgow to have to play out of their own 22. And when Exeter are doing that, they can just suffocate teams, force the mistake. Thank you very much, boys.
Glasgow, who are going to be without Dave Rennie.
Yeah.
So with
when does he leave?
Wilson's taking over.
Is that already happened or
was Rennie involved this week? I don't. It's happening imminently. If it's not,
I think that's one hell of a signing. I think that's probably the best international signing yet.
So Rennie going to Australia.
Obviously, Jamie Joseph is important, but he was already there. Australia. I mean, I think they could be the real deal in 6 months.
Well, especially if they get rid of their 60 cap. Limit, which they're looking at, as are Wales.
Yeah. Gatland's Law.
Let's not talk about Wales.
Gatland's Law and Gitto's Law.
Who would it affect Australia-wise?
Well, it would just mean any of the players that are currently playing already can go, because the Australian, the ARU, the Australian sides are really struggling to compete, and it looks like there might be more money lost from that because they're going through a potential change in broadcasters, and it looks like Fox might well just go, do you know what? Rugby's more trouble than it's worth in Australia.
Mm.
With the last year, and
we've got to pay out Israel Folau.
With the national, is it? Yeah, with the national team and with the national team. Oh, it's just not competing with the other sports in Australia as well. The attendances are really poor.
They are rubbish, aren't they? I mean, I remember watching Super Rugby as a kid, and I always thought it was a much bigger sport down there than it was up here.
Yeah.
And now you could never make that argument. I mean, I'm not sure even if that was true when I was watching it, but at least it felt like it.
So it must be at least the fourth biggest sport.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Fourth or fifth.
Because Rugby League, Aussie rules.
AFL, yeah.
AFL, NRL.
Soccer, though, allegedly.
Probably soccer and cricket, all bigger than rugby.
Yeah, definitely.
Hmm. Yeah, tough times for Australia. But Dave Rennie is a good way to, at least discover the path back.
Yeah. The Australians I know and have spoken to about it have all said the structural problems are from the grassroots up. So from like schoolboy and club level, they just don't have the structures in place.
Just got to pinch a load of Fijians like you did with, what's his face, Kurindrani.
Kurindrani.
Just go and get some more Fijians.
Or just pay a lot of money for an NRL star.
Yeah.
Every now and again.
In fact, there are some articles.
Kurabeti again falls into that category. Yeah.
Let's not go down this rabbit hole, but this is definitely a conversation for another day. But it's interesting, the articles that are starting to come up and the journalism that's being done on the project players going forward, now that because Wales have had two players.
Right. You got in a lot of trouble for this, Tim.
In their squad. No.
Yeah, explain yourself, well, so, xenophobe.
Halaholo and...
what's his name? Fullback winger.
Oh, God, I can't remember now. Brain farted.
McNichol.
McNichol. Johnny McNichol. Yeah. Both included in Wayne Pivac's first Wales squad.
Which, of course, I mean, you hate, right?
I do hate. Yeah. No, absolutely I hate it. I've got no problem saying that. Listen, if I was Wilson Halaholo, Willis Halaholo, sorry.
Just to be clear, sorry, listeners, no. This is... You hate it on racial basis, do you?
Yeah, I only hate it when it's Wales players. I love it when it's English. No, I hate it across the board. And if I was Willis Halaholo, I would do exactly what he's doing. If I was Wayne Pivac, I would select him in my squad as well.
Yeah,
I think every rugby player deserves to earn every single penny they can because it's a short career that can be ended by one tackle.
So you've said that the player should do it. Got it. You've said that who else should do it?
The coach
should do it.
The WRU should do it.
Do you think WRU should do it?
Yep.
Well, who shouldn't do it then?
No, I think it's the right selection in the right squad, and the player's absolutely right to take the opportunity. It doesn't mean I have to like it. I hate it. I don't like it. I didn't like it when Nathan Hughes opted to play for England, but I totally understand why he did, and I would have done exactly the same. Twitter is a place where two things can't be true at once.
That is very true.
You can't think it's... You can't think it's rubbish that Willis Halaholo and Johnny McNichol are going to be Wales internationals, but also that you think it's the right thing for them to do.
Well, I saw you tweet.
And the coach
I saw you tweet from our Twitter account, and I had a look at it. Obviously Tim. I feel the exact opposite to you. Not that it matters. I left it up there because I just love the bedwetting responses.
I particularly enjoyed you being called xenophobic because of it.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I
mean, that is just Twitter right there.
If I built a list of reasons why this shouldn't be allowed to happen, and there's loads of reasons why it shouldn't be allowed to happen. It would take me a couple of days before I got to you being a xenophobe. It would take me like a good 48 hours before it must be xenophobic.
And you'd think in a, you know, broadcasting career on the radio and latterly on TV, this my xenophobia hasn't been discovered now, because there are literally tens of thousands of hours of me broadcasting and no one's ever spotted it. I've kept it so well hidden, xenophobia.
We're in trouble. Someone's just texted.
Oh really?
Yeah, we are in trouble. Someone is watching this. I'm just going to say, I do think Leon will beat Treviso at home.
Leon will beat
Trevor. Oh, Fernsey. Hello, Carl Ferns.
Sorry, mate.
How you doing?
Sorry, buddy. And by the way, he was the outstanding player in both the games.
100%.
100%.
Absolutely.
The silverback's been doing his bit. And I would also say, as we found, and we keep talking the talk, we need to walk the walk at some point. Manchester to Leon, for example, is so easy to do. We could fly in and fly back out for a game.
Exactly. We actually should.
We really
we
should.
Should.
It's so easy. It's easier than getting to London.
Well, they'll be playing some playoffs this year, fingers crossed, in the top 14. So maybe we could get out for one of those.
Yeah.
It would be nice.
And some, I saw a lot of complimentary things about the city, the food, and from Leinster fans that were out there. I had a good old time.
Very good.
What was I saying? Yeah, so I'm allowed to not like the residency laws, but also think that the players are absolutely bang on. Like, if, for example, had Carl Fearn's been eligible for France and the French coach had the opportunity, I would have picked him.
100%.
And he should have taken the opportunity if it presented itself.
Yeah, absolutely. It is all changing because of the five-year rule.
Yes. And this is kind of the point.
Yeah, we
can get to another time, because I want to do a little bit more digging on this, because evidently, on an industrial scale, clubs are taking South African schoolboys straight out of the equivalent of A-levels, aged 18, and putting them into French clubs. And in some cases, the players have been quoted as saying they are doing it with the World Cup 2027 in mind. They want to be French internationals.
Wow. This is what... It's just incentives, isn't it? I mean, people don't like to admit it, but it is what happens. So if we create a situation, for instance, I'll give you an example. We say in the Premiership that if you have an academy product who is English, you can exempt him from the cap. I'll just give you an example. So we are trying to promote, that.
Yeah.
That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
The consequence of that is the competition for kids gets so intense that they're picking up kids, just like football does now, with, like, United will genuinely go through 300 or 400 8-year-olds to find couple of goalkeepers, and that's where this will go. You know, the bigger the money is, the tighter the residency laws, the more they're going to be fishing in ponds for younger kids.
There's a great...
What a mixed metaphor, fishing in ponds for younger kids.
There's a great Science and Sport podcast on this exact problem, talking, and they call it Ross Tucker on that, and Mike. Mike Fitch,
yeah,
on that, call it a race to the bottom, because you are just getting ever younger and younger kids.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
So almost, I might be talking out of turn here, but I'm pretty sure every Premiership club has got very strong ties with every major private school, and there's good reason for that. You know, they want to have a look at the kids that they've got. They want to make sure that they're being coached to the right standard. When they come out, they're going to want them.
Yeah.
So that's just how this will go.
And then that process starts really young, because just purely for their own prestige, the independent schools will go looking at all the local clubs and state schools.
Well, they plucking the kids out for that.
It's always been the case, and but it's just interesting that people go, oh yeah, great, it's been up to 5 years, that'll sort it. No, it won't. Japan are going to have a barren couple of years, because they've had to adjust to the new system, but they're industrially bringing over South Africans to Japan right now.
That's what I would do. That's exactly what I would do.
Yeah, but it's I think World Rugby have got more to do.
Yeah,
but I don't know what you can do. I mean, I think you make it a free for all. I think you should be able to change teams.
Like internationals are like club teams.
I mean, there's going to have to be some caveats, because you need the integrity of the game, right? So you just can't have a free-for-all. But
that's where I struggle to square this.
But I certainly think, like, you should be able to make one international switch in your career.
Yeah, I don't like that, because you have it in league and you have it in football.
Do you have it in football? I've never seen it in football.
What's his name? Costa.
Has he played for Brazil? Diego Costa, Brazil and Spain.
Oh, I did not even play for... I know he was playing for Spain.
I don't know what the rules are, I just know people have done multiple nations in football.
I mean, I think they should be... But then the problem with that, hypothetically, might be Marlon, who goes to Tonga after his career with the All Blacks, and some Tongan kid doesn't get in. Or you don't have Siali Pietau, who's been a servant to Tonga for so long, have that rousing send-off. So there's always going to be problems, but I prefer less rules rather than more.
Yeah, I don't like this, but I also... So, like, if you're taking a Fijian kid... to go and put him in a high-end school in Fiji, in New Zealand or Australia, or France, or wherever.
Amazing.
It's an amazing opportunity for not only that individual...
Yeah, forget the rugby career.
Yeah, yeah. Ignore the rugby.
Life opportunity.
Yeah. But not just for him.
Yeah.
For his whole family. And he,
that would change that family's community. Life. That would be a turning point for the whole family's life.
So I'd hate to see future generations. Those, yeah. Well, I'd hate to see that kind of opportunity be totally thrown away. But I would love for him to have that opportunity and then play for Fiji.
If Montpellier and Toulon were doing it because they want to give back and so give an opportunity for these players who might end up being great club players, great. But I would encourage that. But if they're doing it because they're going, well, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent there. We can have that for France. I don't actually think
the French teams do think like that. I think first and foremost is
they think
win
about
for
themselves.
The club. Win for us. And if you
is there not a quota issue?
Yeah, they call it something. I can't remember what it is. There's a quota issue for kids from the academy, and they call it something. I can't remember what that is.
It's but
they have
to
have a certain amount of French players. Which
the quota issue does seem to be less of a problem in France, as in that they are the ones with the industrial quantities of Saffers and Fijians.
Yeah. Anyway, it's one that we can watch. But actually, the as of January. No, as it's already kicked in, hasn't it? So Willis Alaholo and Johnny McNichol will be among the last people to qualify by a 3-year residency.
Yeah,
Alaholo can play.
I think basically the end of this year. I don't know actually.
Yeah, it's 2019, but
yeah.
Anyway,
very very good.
Back to the rugby. Any other great? Because again, the one bit about travelling is you don't see a massive amount of the other games. Saw as much as I could.
Well, do you want to talk about Sale, La Rochelle?
Because we can talk about some moments of French and French South African madness.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I don't know what goes on at La Rochelle. They came to the AJ Bell. They did not leave a good impression, to put it mildly. I don't understand what the organisation's about. I think they're in trouble. I think they're in serious trouble. I don't know what the league position is, but is it like mid-table?
I'll check now.
I don't think they lost many players to the World Cup.
Well, their age, first and foremost, is I think they're fairly old. I think their age profile is not the youngest.
So they're currently ninth, sandwiched in between Toulouse and Racing. So, but everyone from 13th up to...
I wouldn't pay any attention to the league table now.
Everyone from 13th up to 3rd are within 5 points of one another. So, kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, I just think a few things that went on today, which you know might leave a bit of a strange taste. On the field, they were completely ill-disciplined.
Dumaru in particular, at 13, he's going nuts.
Yeah,
he was cracking.
And he's a great player, by the way. Like he is. I rate him very, very highly. The first 10 minutes. It looked like Arshel hadn't even done up their laces. The first Sale try was one of the easiest tries I've seen. And they were lucky that Sale didn't have their act together, because I think when Sale look at that on Monday or Tuesday or whenever they're in next, they're not going to think that they played well, because they did not play well. But it just gives you an idea of where this La Rochelle team is.
They were playing against 13 men for basically a 20-minute period, roughly 10 minutes either side of first... half time.
And 14 men for 50 minutes.
And 14 men for 50 minutes. But they compounded the 14 men with consecutive yellow cards. Mm. You get one man back from a 10-minute bin down to 13, and Prizo immediately balls in at the side on a maul that's going over the line. Penalty try.
And, you know what? For professional players to respond to... I understand the frustration, and I you could see the players getting more and more frustrated with the referee's interpretation, but that's one of the nuances you get in the European Cup. Particularly, you get referees that
from other places,
from different places, who interpret things in a different way, and part of the challenge is dealing with that. And they just lost it. They got more and more wound up, and then just it was madness.
Yes,
I don't know what kind of animal. I don't think he's an animal. I don't think he's a bad guy. I just think he's an absolute idiot. What, you can't touch someone's eye.
Exactly. So
you can't touch someone's eye.
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
Boogery. So he will be. There will be people that say, "Oh, that was a violent assault, an eye gouge." He was doing it with a smile on his face and but it was.
He likes eye gouging. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't describe it as an eye gouge.
To be honest,
he put his hand on the eye. So you're going to get a red card. You're an idiot. Yeah, you're an idiot. What are you doing?
Say contact with the eye.
What are you doing?
Eye and eye area.
Yeah.
In and around the eye area.
I just watched this. It wasn't.
What does eye area mean?
I don't
exactly.
Know.
Everything.
Eye-ish.
Where does the eye area end and the cheek start?
So imagine you're going to do fancy dress as a panda. the area that you'd colour in black, that's the eye area.
And do you think that's a graphic that that Video Replay should show now?
I think there's
the panda that will come up
be training on that.
Yeah. In the disciplinary hearing, that will be used.
Eye area, panda.
Can we have the panda slide again, please?
Can you superimpose a panda onto Tom Curry's face?
Highly paid QCs looking at pandas. That's how this will end up.
It's like an Instagram filter with a panda face. They'll just put one of those on Tom Curry's face.
Yeah, I mean, the players were going nuts. The coaches were going nuts. So you can kind of see how it filters down. Which really surprised me, actually.
Yeah. So, did you get to see much of Ronan?
I sit next to him.
Rog.
Were you?
Yeah, him and John O'Gibbs. Is it John O'Gibbs?
Yeah.
John O'Gibbs.
There's a fair few Irishmen plying their trade. You've had Paul O'Connell at Stad, Mike Prendergast from Munster at Racing, Rog.
Yeah. John O'Gibbs had some time in Ulster. Yeah, in Northern Ireland.
And was he also Claremont for a little while?
He was. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was an underwhelming performance.
And yet, at one point, you thought, La Rochelle are going to do this.
Through the second half, this just had Oldham Talk 8 written all over it. the chances...
A reference everyone understands.
Yeah.
Well, if they listen to this podcast, they certainly should. the chances were so available for Sale, and they came about so frequently. I just don't think Sale executed well, or they just didn't take it seriously.
They didn't execute well.
No, the kicking. What were they doing? The kicking. I mean, every time they were on an overlap, they just kicked it away.
The best execution from Sale was the disallowed try, which also proves it was not the best execution.
Yeah.
Because they should have scored that try.
Yeah.
And was it Faf who just gets in front?
He was so in front, though.
He was so on Faf.
Yeah.
He did not have a good game.
No.
World Cup hangover.
No, he's fine. I mean, look, they were all substandard, frankly.
Yeah, they were.
And they somehow managed, and it's good to grind out a win. And I didn't like the midfield combination of how that was set up one bit. More importantly, though, Sale are still in it, and you know these two games against Exeter are going to be vital for both.
Yeah,
clubs,
Northampton as well did not play well, but came away from Treviso with a win.
They did.
Yeah, bonus point
in an absolute cracker by the sounds of things. I didn't watch it.
It was. I think the Benetton fans will feel very hard done by.
Yeah, there was a slight.
I do feel hard done by, but sadly, I was playing as witness, so I didn't watch it.
The final penalty was definitely a penalty, so they can't feel aggrieved about that. But there was a try towards the end where there was a slight home contact. So a Benetton kick from their own 22 doesn't go into touch. I think Furbank collects it, and slight home is, he certainly, I don't think he changed his line. This is the interesting thing, but he knows what he's doing and he bumps off.
Cynical.
Yeah. I'm not sure. They were complaining about it in comms, but I'm not sure.
No, I think that's fine. I think there was a forward pass, quite a clear forward pass in the build-up to the penalty. The bigger ended up slotting.
Was there?
Yeah, apparently so, yeah.
Ooh.
Because they checked on the penalty,
yeah,
but didn't check the forward pass that was immediately before the penalty. I think I'm right in saying that.
The penalty was definitely a penalty.
I may have that wrong. I agree with you there. But I think Benetton fans were a little bit annoyed going, why don't you just go back 2 more seconds and there's a forward pass.
It is annoying that.
Yeah, it was. Because it was a deliberate knock-on, and it wasn't, so in line with the laws.
I don't like that law.
I don't particularly like it either, and I don't like that it's a misleading name based on the way the law is written.
Yeah.
Because it's not to do with deliberate.
No.
I mean, it clearly is in some circumstances, but it's to do with whether you're in a reasonable position.
It's hard to draw a line between deliberately knocking it on and knocking it on.
Yeah.
It's hard to draw that line, and I understand basically, and it seems arbitrarily enforced, like if it happens 5 metres from your own line, it will just be a knock on. Yeah. But if it happens when you're in attack,
Yeah.
Then it'll be a penalty and maybe a yellow card. I don't like the law, but fine. It is what it is, and it was interpreted and executed properly, and Dan Bigger but not only that, he kicked it like Jimmy Gopperth. Just swatted it.
Yeah. Whacked it.
Going on, I think the one game that we've not touched on, to wrap it up, to link from the French madness in the La Rochelle game to some French madness at a mall in the Montpellier-Gloucester game.
I didn't see any of this game.
Jacques Duplessis. It was a carbon copy repeat of Vlahamina.
Oh, yeah.
In the World Cup semi-final against Wales.
Yeah.
It was so, it's so obvious. It's
the
so
referee
stupid.
Even referenced that in the decision, didn't he? Was it the Irishman? Can't remember his name. Anyway, but he said, oh, it's like, oh, not going to do the accent. It's like, he said, this is like the red card in the World Cup, isn't it? The French one. Yeah.
That was it.
Tell you what, we've not spoken about Bath Harlequins either, or have we?
No.
Yeah, there's not much to talk about.
Two teams who are absolute frauds.
Oh, something we have not talked about at all. What did you make, like, the Joe Marler thing?
The horse.
Oh,
horse.
My God, like the Washington Post covered it. It's gone all around the world. You had, like, it's gone, probably that has got more coverage outside of actual the World Cup. That's got more coverage than anything rugby-based.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
In years.
And
you've got that and Haskell at the minute. You've got, so rugby's getting a bit of PR, nothing to do with the game, just the characters in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
How's Haskell getting on? I haven't watched any of it as well.
Me neither. Not my scene.
What's that?
I'm a Celebrity.
I hear things about it occasionally, but...
positive about Haskell? I've got no idea.
I don't know. They're not positive about him. I've got no idea. Maybe. Maybe they are.
I'm sure he's doing great. He's doing great.
I imagine.
Keep going, James.
He's an infectious character. Go and win it, James.
Yeah.
Chow down that kangaroo bollock.
Whatever it is you're doing.
lads.
So yeah, Gloucester totally changed up their team. Played a much weaker team, particularly after, so they changed 12 or 13 players, and Jason Woodward got injured the day before. So Banahan slotted in at 15.
Banners.
So you look at that with Lloyd Evans starting at 10.
Yeah.
And you think they're going to get chewed up and spat out by Montpellier. And to an extent in the first half, they were. Their scrum was under all sorts of pressure in that first half. But Montpellier just aren't actually a very good team.
I know.
They've not got the cohesiveness and the coordination. And Gloucester, rightly or wrongly, were trying to run things
just letting the boys play, weren't they?
They absolutely were letting the boys play. And first half they struggled but stayed in the game. Second half, when Jacques Duplessis has his Vahamina moment of madness, they actually then, the game suits how they were trying to play, and they get back into it. And they were arguably unlucky not to get... If that game had gone on for 5 minutes longer, Gloucester would have had a famous bonus point win. But unfortunately, they just get the one losing bonus point.
Yeah. But enough for them to go, right, that's it for this year.
Probably, yes.
And then Harlequins beat Bath. I think that'll be irrelevant. It'll be irrelevant in the end of it.
Game changers on the team sheet.
Yes, they do.
Do they? Yeah. I've thought of a new name for substitutes. Concussion boys. So, I came to this thought the other day. Do you know when you put on a player just to protect your starters? So, in effect, you're saying, right, I'm going to get Mario Itoje off and I'll throw someone else on. So, Mario Itoje is not going to get injured. Well, what you're basically saying is, I hope that this guy gets injured in ahead of... If there's going to be an injury, I hope it's that guy, not Mario. Not that I want him either, you know. So concussion boys.
Or a glue boy. You know how they just, like, chuck old horses in melt in to make glue.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the glue boys.
So we win this game. Get me a concussion boy. Throw him on the field.
I have just looked up an official Harlequins and Premier Rugby press release from three weeks ago.
And who are the concussion boys?
They're game changers.
Oh, sorry, game changers.
They do officially, formally announce it as game changers.
Yeah, well, if someone's brave enough to just put concussion boys, I'm all for that.
those two clubs playing each other, I don't think it'll have any effect on Champions Cup. Harlequins or Bath are not going through, and they're kind of
both frauds.
They're the most they're the ones that look really just unsettled and uncertain, and
I completely agree with that. I mean, it's sort of the...
I mean, everyone, you look at the table and obviously Leicester have issues, but those two, you kind of like...
Yeah, like how to get out of the championship next year. I mean, they've got real issues. I think that's pretty much the Heineken Cup done.
Yeah. One thing I want to say is we are very aware from our stats and the information we get that we have a big chunk of listeners in the States.
We do. Mm. That is a fact, actually.
I think around about 1 in 10. Of all of our listeners are in America, which is really cool. And we also know there are a lot of people that have travelled with us for weekends away. So I just want to float this and say, please get in touch. Drop a DM on Twitter. We're at Rugby Podcast. Or, you know, send us a little note or email. contacteggchasers@gmail.com. That's contacteggchasers@gmail.com. If a little sojourn to... Las Vegas in February.
Las Vegas. All new. If you want to go to the States to watch Six Nations, let us know. Basically.
Well, not Six Nations.
No, not.
It's a Vegas Weekender, which is Major League Rugby. I've got four or five games across a weekend. And then there's all sorts of other rugby going on that you can watch in sports bars in Vegas.
Ah.
Or a Six Nations event in New York. Bottom line is, we're just trying to gauge interest in potentially doing something stateside.
Yes, quite.
We went out to New York for the London Irish game. You boys went to Philadelphia when the All Blacks played Ireland there. You went to Chicago for that, sorry. And you went to Philadelphia when it was Newcastle Saracens.
What a game that was.
Epic game. Amazing game.
That was one of the best weekends I've ever had.
No, it was unbelievable.
And the London Irish weekend was pretty mad. Ended up in the Irish consulate knocking back Guinness with the London Irish boys. It was pretty wild weekends. But we would love to know if there's any appetite or what appetite there is for people from the States or people from the UK to maybe join us for a few days somewhere for some fun.
Should we put a hashtag on there? Hashtag Egg Chasers American Dream.
That's a long old. What about Prem Picks?
if you don't understand that one, Premier Rugby,
the geniuses wanted
to do a social media campaign where they got people to share pictures of them at Premiership games with the hashtag Prem Picks. Only Prem Picks, when you go on the hashtag, was very different.
Right.
They were premium content. Yep. That is
very,
for sure.
Very premium.
but not for a family rugby audience.
Hashtag Bristol Bears.
So yeah, Bristol Bears. That's another one, exactly.
So hashtag
Egg Chasers USA.
Fine.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay. So on that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Come on, though. Moving away from the Heineken Cup and, you know, overseas and whatnot. CBC have got involved with the Pro 14 this week, confirmed.
They have. And you wrote a little article.
I did.
Linking it to the Premiership.
It's very, very hard to write because it's quite a hard subject to explain.
Yeah, so
it's quite hard to get information on it.
It is quite hard to get information on. And it is quite hard to... I mean, I'll say it from another point of view. It's quite hard to be interested in it as well.
I think that's wrong. I think it's a very interesting subject. We're not going to agree on that. It's probably more interesting us disagreeing on it then.
I think I can understand why a financial advisor would find it a lot more interesting than I would.
But you do find it interesting.
If I had more transparency, if I knew what was going on, I would find it more interesting. So I find the whole the strategy and the decision making and the potential consequences of what that could mean.
What CBC are thinking.
For everything else.
What CBC are thinking and what it might change in 5 years' time, that I find interesting.
So all I'm going to say is, now I know a bit about the deal and the risks involved in the deal. Now, I wrote an article on Rugby Pass. If you want to see the details, go find it there, it's fine. And I try and explain the risks. So it's not a deep, detailed version. It's not exactly what has happened, but it's close enough. I'm trying to explain the risks. And effectively, what Premier Rugby have done is they've given away a third of
their... Or the Pro 14.
And Pro 14, well, in Premier Rugby's situation, which is the same for Pro 14, I assume, is they've basically given away one third of their TV rights.
27%, but yeah.
Forever.
For £200 million.
For £200 million. They've converted their income into capital. So if the Premiership rugby teams decide to spend it all on players and paying out directors from director loan accounts and, paying off other debts... That money's going to soon run out because when the BT Sport money came in last month, it was down by 30%, as it would be, because 30% of it has gone to CBC, which is fine. That is a deal that they struck.
Yep.
But
they've been compensated for that.
Yeah.
For those shares.
But I would just say I'm embarrassed that I didn't know the detail. I mean, we're not professional reporters, are we? So it's not our job.
Well, easy.
So you are a professional a reporter, but it's not our job to look into stuff like that. And yet, between the three of us, I don't think any of us really knew the structure of the deal. And I can't believe that no one scrutinised it in the press properly either. And if they have, I've missed it.
There's been very little, because when we were talking about this offline before your article came out, I was actually digging for some information. Because I was trying to, I couldn't find anything on the structures of and how... Because the bit that I didn't get, which has become clear to me now, was how the... CVC have basically purchased a single stream of what is effectively a single stream of the Premiership clubs' income.
Yeah, that's exactly what they've done.
Because they've not invested in the clubs, they've invested in what seems like a third party organisation that the Premiership rugby or the TV rights to the Premiership is filtered through in order to get to the league,
yeah.
the clubs.
So they get part of the income, but they have none of the expenditure
on that stuff.
The way you talk about it, you seem to be thinking this is like some outrageous deal that what have the clubs done? I don't see it like that.
The more I think about it, the more that's exactly what I think.
So also, I don't see it like that. I see it as a trade-off. Obviously, you've got the £200 million flowing in one direction, you've got the future TV rights flowing in the other direction. But there is a big benefit to the clubs that they have tied their future income to a party that is directly interested in growing that future income, who have experience of growing that future income.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I did get that. And do you know what? What would be amazing is if they repackage the Premiership rights, the Pro 14 rights, and some Six Nations rights, and it all goes out in one go, and hey presto, everyone gets more money. That's me. Is awesome.
Yeah.
But here is what I'd say. CVC have given the Premiership clubs £200 million.
And £150 million or whatever it is to Pro 14.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just go with the Premiership one, because it's easy to talk about that one. So £200 million has come in. Now, £200 million, of course, is a lot of money.
Are you just doing the article that you've written? Because let's not do the whole thing. No. Yeah, keep it simple.
£200 million is like
35 million quid a club.
Yeah, it's... No, it's no. 15 million. It's about 15 million.
Was it 25 million?
Oh, no, 13 clubs. So
hold on, what's... Oh, no, that's the Welsh Regions were saying that they were getting 35 million. Anyway. But that's anyway.
My point is, if it is that valuable, right, why would you need to give CVC so much of your potential income?
Because it's only valuable in theory.
Yeah, but why would you...
Because it's an...
Why can't you employ the same people?
Because it's an acknowledgement that...
Or same expertise. For that amount of money that you're talking, you can literally just go out and buy that expertise. If you're worried about media expertise, go and buy it.
But they lose money every year, don't they? The Premiership clubs.
And they're not going to make any more. It would be my... Look, just looking at this, they're not going to make any more because they've given away their income... For some capital, well, once that is spent, but game's up.
I understand what you're saying.
Aligned it. That's the bit that I like, is that they've aligned their interests with someone who is also very now vested in.
So yeah, that 200 million quid you've spent, if you don't pull an unbelievable deal out, which means that our 70% is worth more than the 100% was a few years ago, you're going to lose out. Probably more than we are.
Well, even if it just stayed static, right? Even if the rights just stayed static from now until, for 10 years or 15 years, CVC are going to get 30% of this deal, the next deal, the next deal, the next deal.
Yeah.
And they're servicing a £200 million debt, don't forget.
Yeah,
so.
But at the end of it, what they'll have, Tim, is they'll have an asset which they can still sell anyway. So they can literally say, well, look, here is a thing which produces this percentage of income.
I think this is getting too far down the rabbit hole.
I feel that there's a podcast special here somewhere, and which we should investigate more.
You saying that you're amazing that no one knows about it and this. I'd sort of got you're a big believer in free markets.
100%.
And, yeah, totally. Well, what I would say is there is a reason why articles haven't been written, because I don't think anyone cares. Maybe they should. Your article will be the first step in trying to open people's eyes to why they should
have
care.
Actually grasped what a bad
deal
is.
No.
So I don't see it like that. I think the way to make people care, and the way that you could do this, is to look at the speculation as to what the changes could be in order for CVC to get the money back. So package it up as a British and Irish league or a European league or... However it is, there could be fundamental structural changes to the way that rugby is run at the moment that could make it a more attractive product.
I mean, interesting. Yeah, there certainly needs to be changes. Look, I think it could go fine, but I just think it's too one-sided. I think there's no risk on CVC side, really.
200 million quid.
Yeah.
It's not a small amount of money to be servicing.
And So their risk is the opportunity cost of the alternative investment.
It is.
Which would be, what, 5-6% yield on a £200 million pound investment?
Effectively what they've done is they've just created themselves a really valuable income stream forever. And, their overheads are basically nothing except for the money that they've borrowed. That's it. It almost works like a financial instrument.
Venture capitalists don't work for... small yields year on year on year. They'll be looking at a...
Well, it depends what they're doing. So a venture capitalist would want a multiplication of their investment. A private equity fund might just be looking for very substantial and steady income streams. And that's exactly what they've done. And if that income stream increases, then they'll be able to sell whatever it is that produces that income stream for a lot more.
I think you should do some more. And then people, if they we can put it out into the marketplace of ideas. And if people are interested and want to click on it, I want to listen to 2 hours of it, do it.
Yeah, well, hear me now, believe me later. This is not a good deal. And if the clubs don't invest, the only thing which can prevent this being an absolute monumental, two things can prevent this being a monumental disaster. One, the next TV rights deal grows by more than 30%. Okay, that has to happen. Two, the clubs need to invest this money wisely. Please, this is like me pleading. Please do not just spaff it on salaries and...
on Faf de Klerk.
Yeah, don't do that. Build some stadiums or some hotels or something. Please do something with it.
I think some people have already ignored that.
There is an argument, isn't there? There's an argument to say,
we'll see.
It's not all in infrastructure, is it?
No.
There was another game this week. I don't know if either of you saw the result of this, but it's quite interesting based on something that we did last year. There was an international friendly.
Who?
Spain.
Oh yeah, I did see this.
Played Hong Kong. So, Spain...
Hong Kong, the international side that will be most affected by the new residency laws.
Yes, because they can't take potential investment bankers at 11 years old. Yeah, it's Spain beat Hong Kong 29-7, which is just so Hong Kong, who played very well in the game that we saw in Marseille, but made a very good account of themselves. But Spain, who played even better when we saw them, hammered Germany, who were in the
repechage.
So I really hope that Spain continue their rugby trajectory, and in 4 years' time, we're talking about them in a World Cup.
That is still, of course, the other option on the table. That Super Saturday weekend.
Super Saturday in Madrid.
Spain play Portugal in Madrid.
That's the one I want to do. I'm not going to lie. That's the one I want to do. I mean, obviously the bright lights.
That does sound good, doesn't it? Spain v Portugal in Madrid on the Sunday lunchtime after Super Saturday.
That's like a dream, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole day of watching international rugby.
Followed by a whole day of watching international tier two rugby.
We need two hashtags then. We need hashtag Egg Chasers USA.
I'll tell you what.
Hashtag Egg Chasers Madrid.
ESP. Yeah. All right, this is it. So do we go stateside? Do we go big and do we go American, or do we go...
Do we conquer America? That is the question.
Or do we go and show our love to... Do we conquer America, or do we go back and show
our
support to Spain?
Solidarity with Spain.
Our European friends and partners.
Next week's Premiership.
Premiership.
Oh, give me the fixtures, Phil.
Well, there is also the Wales fixture, which no one really
don't cares. Don't care. Don't want to talk about it.
No one really cares.
Spoken
about.
Like a true Welshman.
Yeah, couldn't care less.
Right, Friday night, Bath host Saracens.
Saracens, who I imagine will be at double full strength.
This will be... There'll be no rest in Owen Farrell. There'll be no rest in Billy. There'll be no rest in Itoji.
Stop. There's one more thing I meant to say.
Oh, goodness.
Something that happened at the Sale game. I meant to say, can the law just be changed so that a quick conversion is irrelevant if you don't give a try?
I agree. Is it a thing or is it not a thing?
It is a thing.
It is definitely a thing.
It's definitely a thing.
So I heard today, obviously I was watching the game, so I didn't... It looked to me as a conversion had been taken.
Yeah.
And then they said, oh, conversion scrap. But apparently it was blown before the conversion was
It wasn't
taken.
Blown. No, the TMO was looking at replays, but the referee hadn't said time off, TMO. So the referee basically had a bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card because he could say it was already being looked at.
Is it written down somewhere, that law?
Yeah, it is. Just like... It is. Well, I assume it is, but I don't know. But it's a stupid law.
Do you know what I think?
It's a stupid law.
I think it's been grandfathered in from the NFL. So in the NFL, that you can't review a play once the next play's occurred.
Yeah.
And I think, because so many rugby players watch the NFL, we have no point of reference to what we can go back. We just assume it's we take the kick.
It's not in the spirit of the game anyway, because it's just wrong that someone goes, oh, I don't think that was really a try. Quick, conversion.
Drop goal.
That's just not in the spirit of the game anyway, is it?
No, it's a silly rule, and it needs to be... It needs to just... So we know what's going on.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous when players are giving the game away, sprinting to get like their tee, and unnecessarily rushing the kick. So, it's the biggest giveaway in the world. It's just strange.
I will mention one very good bit of officiating from JP Doyle on Friday night.
More good officiating from JP Doyle.
Which was, the rolling maul that Ulster scored. So he said he didn't actually see the grounding, but he knew the ball was in a position where it was definitely going to be grounded. But can you just check? So his on-field decision is try,
even though he didn't see the ball ground.
Like and it was just a very, very well thought through way of dealing with the problem.
And
it was meant that it was very quick. So you only had to check a couple of angles. We've got the on-field decision. None of the Claremont players are in the way. Try.
Yeah.
T-R-Y.
Yes.
In the words of Steve-O.
Loved it. You're right. That was great. Good bit of officiating.
So, Bath Saracens, I can't wait for this. This is what makes Saracens exciting now. Saracens used to be a little bit, let's be honest, they used to be a little bit dull.
The Borg.
They'd show up, batter someone. Now it matters. And this is so exciting. I genuinely can't wait for it.
Yeah, it's a good narrative. It's for all the wrong reasons, it has created some interest in the
They should find someone every year.
It feels like a movie script, doesn't it? Like, you can imagine the montage bit being the little period of the season we're coming into. You can imagine it, if it was a Hollywood movie, there'd be a montage where you'd see a couple of little highlights and then Saracen's name, the point tally, up.
I imagine it being a bit like, a bit like the start of Pearl Harbor, where all the ships get sunk and then they have to slowly rebuild. It's that sort of seriousness. It's going to be awesome, and Saracens are going to win it comfortably.
I think Saracens are going to win.
I think Saracens are going to win. Although I think it won't be comfortable, because Bath at home will be
screw
all right.
Screw them. It's Saracens.
How can they be so bad away from home, Bath?
Yeah.
Not only that.
That's so much better.
They're
going to
get a try bonus point.
Saracens. Yeah, I agree.
Minus 18 by the end of the day.
I agree. Saracens is going to be a big win.
Closing in on Leicester Tigers at 4, who then go to the Gardens.
They're not 22 points behind, are they? They're 26 behind.
It was 26.
Because they're on minus 22.
Yes, minus 22, so they'll be minus 18.
They'll be on minus 18. Or no, you're saying they'll be on minus 17.
Yes.
Oh, minus, even better.
Yeah,
which could put them 21 points behind Leicester, who travel on Saturday to, you just mentioned it,
Northampton.
Franklin's Gardens.
And tasty game.
And they are getting 0 points out of that game. Absolutely
they'll
no
have,
points.
They'll have their England players en masse.
Yes.
I don't think it matters.
Manu, Johnny May, Ford, Ben Youngs.
If Johnny May's fit.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I know he played the final, but he wasn't fit for those last 2 weeks.
No.
Bad teams are bad teams. They're going down to Northampton.
I think
Northampton have not been playing well the last couple of weeks.
No. The Lyon game last week was good. I thought they were,
oh yeah, I mean, I
thought the Lyon game was very impressive.
No. They were actually. But
this week, Treviso are no joke.
No, I know. At home as well.
They were away at Treviso. Yeah?
They were away at Treviso. Yeah. So as in Treviso at home Benetton at home is a tough place.
They scored a ton of points.
Yeah.
There is no way Northampton can lose this.
Northampton are going to win.
Northampton are going
to
win.
Leicester will be looking to get one, possibly two.
They'll get a losing bonus point.
Because bonus points this season are going to be so important.
Yeah.
And Northampton are going to be seriously confident too.
Big one, that.
Other games on Saturday. We've got Exeter hosting Wasps.
Exeter.
Home win.
Even with loads of changes. Yeah. Exeter will change almost everyone.
Yeah,
and it won't matter.
They were
won't
even notice. Team, definitely. And then Worcester host Sale.
In fact, Exeter fantasy rugby draft, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to think about this.
Yeah.
Deeply, think about it. Think about it deeply. Yeah, think about it.
Three cheers
for Rob Baxter.
So I can tell you right now, this is a game Sale are very not worried about.
Which game? Sorry?
Worcester Sale.
Hosting Sale.
It's a big game. They know they've been there before. They went last year and got beat away at Worcester. I think there's a huge amount of respect for what Alan Solomons has done with that team. They're better than last year. And if Sale wants to be considered a top four team, going to have to win this one.
Yeah.
Mm. No choice about it. And if they don't, I think they need to start having some serious discussions about why this team isn't performing better.
So who's going to win?
It's a long season.
Prediction?
Sale by bonus point, obviously.
Give me Worcester. I saw Sale up in Glasgow and they did not travel well to that one.
It's weird. The home away thing's really interesting. Yeah. And Worcester have had a couple of weeks resting. I'm going to go Sale to sneak it. A rare away win.
Then on Sunday, two games.
These are hard games to pick. Well, actually, one is easy. Bristol Bears will win.
Bristol, London Irish.
Happy with that one.
Bristol will win.
Harlequins, Gloucester isn't straightforward.
London Irish could be introducing Adam Coleman. And they've got a couple of big names coming in. They've already had Waisaki Naholo playing.
Yeah.
So interesting, they'll be getting better. Interesting what they're going to, they played Paddy Jackson back at fly half this week and Stephen Myler wasn't in the matchday squad. I don't know whether. We'll see.
Well, I mean, at some point, Paddy Jackson's going to have to justify his massive pay packet in order to and play 10. So, you know, throw him at 10 now, I guess. That's why he's there. He's not there to be like a second-rate fullback.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Yeah, Bristol will win. Yeah. And stay top of the league.
Yeah. And yeah, bonus point win for Bristol.
Frankie.
And then Quinn's hosting Gloucester.
This is really difficult because I think Quinn's all rubbish. and I think Gloucester are losing their way a bit.
Yeah. I thought Gloucester did well playing a totally different way with totally different personnel in Montpellier. But
I hope that liberates them slightly.
It might do. It might do, but then
Mostar and Slater, you just need them. That's really it.
You need them, and Cipriani, when he's on form, he's not going to be playing that way. He's not going to be throwing it from his under his own sticks. Give me Gloucester to put a bit more pressure on Quinns and Gustard.
I think this is the hardest to call for me. I agree with you, actually, though. I think Gloucester will sneak it.
So I'm just looking at this table. So Harlequins are obviously third from bottom. Now, they're not third from bottom. They're fourth from bottom, right?
Yeah.
In my mind, they're third from bottom.
Okay.
So Harlequins...
Because Saracens are not going to finish bottom,
correct,
in your mind.
So Harlequins, Wasps and Leicester Tigers are all above Saracens. This is a slow death. This is a slow, slow death for someone. Watching Saracens every week chip away.
What was that film... Away. 127 hours or whatever it was, one with the guy stuck in his arm in a trap.
Yeah, his arm, a boulder, he's like,
yeah, that's it,
out in the middle of nowhere, and a boulder falls on his arm.
To me, it's more like that episode of Black Mirror when they're being chased by the dog and the dog never stops.
Oh god, those robot dogs.
The Saracens robot dogs. Like these three teams are running as hard as they can, and all they can hope really is that they run faster, the two of them run faster than one of them.
Yeah,
that's all they can hope. And one of them's like gonna die, but who is it?
Yeah, and you can imagine like Wasps or Dai Young or Jordan Murphy are going to be waking up in cold sweats. And it's like...
checking underneath their bed.
Yeah, it's like...
Is that Saracens?
You know that scene in Aliens where they have those machines that have the sort of radar on the gun like that makes a beep noise when the aliens get closer?
Oh, yes, and they can see them coming...
Beep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like in the roof or something.
Beep, beep, beep. It's like that, isn't it?
Yep.
They're getting closer.
Saracens are coming. Oh God!
Any more movie metaphors for Saracens clawing back their deficit?
The Saracens robot dogs, the robot dog pack,
robot wolf pack.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, glorious!
Terminator 2, when the T-1000 is chasing the car.
Yes. Yes.
The metal spikes come out.
Yeah.
Right. Glorious stuff.
There we go.
Ooh, God! I love the Premiership this year. Any more for any more? Anyone got anything else of any note of any note to say?
Nice pink socks.
Thank you, mate. Calvin Klein's. Right, come on, wrap it up, Tim. Let's go home.
Right, you know where we are. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Subscribe on, wherever you get your podcast. Tell us whether you would join us on a Tier 2 tour to Madrid for Super Saturday and Spain v Portugal. Whether you would consider coming stateside for some shenanigans. And, just get in touch. contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Hashtag. Or just get in touch on Twitter.
Yeah, don't email us with a hashtag. That'd be ridiculous.
And just tell your mates. Hashtag. Tell your mates to listen and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.